This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD. Online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm your moderator, Christine James, joined by reporters tonight from WATD, Tom Gorman and Bobby Clark, asking questions. It's the Republican primary election race for state rep for the 1st Plymouth District. Both candidates, Dee Wallace Spencer and Jesse Brown, vying to be on the ballot for the general election this fall. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Timing you all is our own Charlie Fulmer, and we're joined by our media partner, Local Scene, PAC TV. Now, our format is simple. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready. The opening, no longer than 2 minutes, and the close, a 1 minute. Now, we have a round of questions from the reporters with answers limited to a minute, then a lightning round where answers are either yes or no, or two sentences tops. Also, please try to keep your answers, as we said, to about a minute. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. We choose opening and closing order out of the official WATD stand-in newsroom koozie. We're going to begin with Dee Wallace Spencer, then Jesse Brown, and we reverse that order when we do our closing statements. If you live in the 1st Plymouth District or you're not sure what the 1st Plymouth District is, it is all in the town of Plymouth, precincts 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. I could never memorize that. That's why I had to write that down. So good evening, everybody. Glad you could be here getting ready for that September 3rd primary. Let's begin now with our opening statement, Dee Wallace Spencer.
Thank you, Christine. I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. My name is Dee Wallace Spencer. Plymouth is my home. I was raised here, and I raised my children here. I love Plymouth, and I love the people who live there. I am running for office because I want to take care of my community. For those of you who don't know me, I am an educator and a businesswoman. I have master's degrees in criminal justice and education, and a PhD in research and statistics. I am a fierce advocate for first responders. I am proud to have been endorsed by the Massachusetts Coalition of Police, which is the largest police union in the Commonwealth. I'm a faculty member at Northeastern University in the School of Business. My peers have elected me 3 times in a row to be their representative on the Faculty Senate, which oversees the goals, policies, and planning for the entire university. This has prepared me to be your representative on Beacon Hill. I am also a small business owner. I have served on industry boards and committees that tackle the legislative, insurance, and safety needs of businesses who build our statewide infrastructure. So I have firsthand knowledge of state regulations and their impact on businesses. For the past 6 years, I have served on the Plymouth Economic Development Foundation. Our focus is land use, small business development, and workforce training. Our goal is to enhance quality of life through sound economic growth, which increases our commercial tax base and provides meaningful jobs to our residents. Finally, I am passionate about community service. I was an elected town meeting member. I also coached youth sports for many years. I developed relationships with children, parents, and grandparents that continue to this day. I understand the challenges that my community is facing, that every generation in my community is facing, because I'm actively engaged with our residents. I have always been and will always be available to the people of Plymouth.
Thank you. That was the opening statement with Dee Wallace Spencer. Now let's go to opening statement for Jesse Brown.
Good evening to all of our listeners and of the 1st Plymouth District. Thank you to WATD and our host for tonight's Republican Forum and to my opponent for attending tonight. My name is Jesse Brown, Republican candidate to be your state representative in the 1st Plymouth District. I proudly served our country in the United States Marine Corps, established a successful telecommunication construction business with over 50 employees, co-founded a nonprofit that helps veterans in need. I'm a proud father of a fiercely independent 17-year-old daughter. Full disclosure, 46 years old, 25-year resident of Plymouth, member of the Marine Corps League and Veterans of Foreign Wars, post-1822. Proudly sat on the executive board for many years of the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and prior member of the Massachusetts Labor and Workforce Development Board. To all of our listeners out there, ask yourself these questions. Are you struggling? Would you like to keep more of your hard-earned money? Is safety a priority for you and your family? We have a migrant crisis that continues to strain our local resources and services to our residents, with costs becoming unsustainable. Affording to Live in Massachusetts continues to drain our pocketbooks and savings, with taxes, energy, utilities, childcare, insurances consistently creeping up. Housing has become completely out of reach for the working class families, with average homes hovering around $600,000. We have a current government mindset on Beacon Hill that does not feel the urgency on many issues. We need to audit the legislature to bring transparency and accountability to the State House. Public safety needs to be prioritized and not hindered from missed revenue marks. The proper funding to our law enforcement, firefighters, and EMS is detrimental to our safety. As your state representative for the 1st Plymouth District, I will be effective, focused, reliable, and will work tirelessly to put Massachusetts residents first. Thank you to everyone listening tonight.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement with Jesse Brown. Now we're going to go to questions from our reporters. Let's begin with WATD's Bobby Clark.
Good evening. I asked this of both of you, and I'll go first to Dee. You've talked to a lot of people. You've been running for a long time. What do you see when you talk to people, and what do you hear is their biggest concern? And how would you address it?
So what people have told me repeatedly is that they don't feel that our state government is prioritizing them and their needs. They're very frustrated that the funding is going to pay for the migrant crisis, but at the same time, they're frustrated because they feel like there's not only a fiscal crisis, but there's a humanitarian crisis, and Massachusetts really has no plan to deal with it, to fix it. And in general, they feel like they're not being taken care of well by their legislature. And I would like to be a voice in the legislature, an independent voice in the legislature. There's currently a supermajority of Democrats that really toe the line with regard to what their party leadership wants them to do. And I would be a strong, independent voice that would speak loudly for my community.
Same question, Jesse Brown.
So, I mean, there's multiple things that you hear when you're out there. I mean, number one is the economy, so the astronomical taxes. I mean, that's number one. Number two, we're going into the migrant crisis. We're going that. And then number three, especially in Plymouth and in Massachusetts, is the affordability aspect, especially of housing right now. I mean, we go back to the migrant crisis. We have almost 7,500 families spending over $1 billion just on housing, not to include the $2 billion that we pay for all the other services every year. So a $3 billion cost to our taxpayers that they see. The housing issue that we have, like I said earlier in my opening statement, $600,000, that's in Plymouth, but in Massachusetts, almost $920,000 for an average home. That's unattainable for anybody that's out there. We talk about the taxes. People that live on the waterfront in Plymouth, we have a coastal town. The waterfront people, if they didn't inherit their homes, they would not be able to afford them today. Their taxes have almost doubled from almost $9,000 to $18,000.
Okay. Any follow-up with that?
No, I'd like to pass it on.
Okay, great. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates. We'll start this time with Jesse Brown.
You both touched upon the migrant crisis. If elected, how would you address that issue?
So number one, it's stop the funding, the $1 billion to the housing. That's number one. Repeal the right to shelter law, that put a residency requirement into that. Third would be stop giving driver's license to illegal immigrants. I mean, all this costs money at the end of the day, and we have to be fiscally responsible because it is unsustainable. As I said earlier, too, you put Massachusetts residents first. It is a humanitarian crisis, as Dee said, but at the same token, we have to put our residents first. And those are three things you can do instantaneously is change the residency requirement, and this pretty much goes away.
Okay. Same question, Dee Wallace Spencer.
So I agree. We need to amend the right to shelter law. And this actually has been proposed multiple times by Republicans in the House and the Senate. And they were turned down overwhelmingly by the Democratic majority in the House and the Senate. They came forward with 9 months, 6 months, 3 months. And the problem is on Beacon Hill, there's a question about who gets credit. So if a Republican comes up with an idea, the Democrats don't want to give the Republican credit for the idea. So they postpone and they delay. And even the governor at this point is now saying we need to do something about it. She's spending enormous amounts of money surveying to find out what can be done when offers have been made, proposals have been made by Republicans.
Okay. Any follow-up question with that? I'm going to ask you a question now. You both have a lot of private sector experience. How would this apply to the world of politics in a state house dominated by Democrats? Dee.
So I actually think it's a huge advantage that I'm in the minority party, because right now on Beacon Hill, Democrats are directed to toe the line. And unfortunately, they are compensated by getting committee chair positions, leadership positions. And their income is dependent on getting these positions. And if the Speaker of the House says, you know, you've violated the order, or you've, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, you can't have your phone on.
There was something I wanted to
say. Okay, sorry. You can't have phone on during a forum. Start the clock over for right. D, sorry.
So they're reliant for their income on the speakers giving them leadership positions. And if they disagree with the leadership, they're penalized. They can have their positions taken away from them. As a Republican, I'm not going to get that leadership position off the bat. So I won't be beholden to anybody. I will be an independent voice, a strong voice. Republicans also serve on multiple committees, so I'll have input in multiple different areas.
Okay. Same question. Jesse?
We just seen last week that we had the legislator sit there and nothing got accomplished. They were in there till about 10:30 in the morning. And John Cone, a progressive, but complete Democrat, progressive Massachusetts, called it an incumbent protection racket. So not to get anything done or accomplished up there is a beneficial thing for the supermajority. And he's even calling for the supermajority of people that are up there, the Democrats, that there has to be a change of guard up there right now. You have to have a balance of power at all times, because nothing will get accomplished. And I completely agree. It's probably one of the few things I would agree with him with from progressive Massachusetts, that it is an incumbent protection racket up there right now.
Okay, let me ask you both a follow-up question. If somebody, as you said, who is a very progressive and more on the left side is saying things have to change, why is it a supermajority of Democrats, and why are there not more votes for independents and Republicans? Jesse?
I think that goes back years to the Speaker of the House. Originally, he was just pushing it, and it's become a Democrat majority in Massachusetts. It's very difficult as a Republican to get elected. There could be a multitude of issues. The reason why, it is what it is. There is no per se exact reason. It's just, it's like going down to Florida. You're not going to get elected pretty much as a Democrat down there.
Okay. Same question. Dee, why do you think it is?
Sure. For starters, Massachusetts is a very blue state. We have had Republican governors in the past, which have helped to restore the balance of power. Unfortunately, right now, we have no balance of power. We have no Republicans in the governor's office or the Speaker of the House or the Senate. And I think it, in many ways, the media influences people's beliefs. If you listen to the media, a lot of times you're vilified if you propose things that are fiscally responsible. I know that I have heard from people that have called me names for saying that I think that we should prioritize our residents. And that's something that you really have to combat.
Okay. You're listening to a WATD political forum. It's the race in the 1st Plymouth District in the Republican primary. We have both candidates here, Dee Wallace Spencer and Jesse Brown. Let's go back now to you, Bobby Clark. Questions for the candidates.
You both have talked about the lack of affordable housing, and I wanted to know what your opinion is about the MBTA communities bylaw. Do you think it's fair relative to trying to provide affordable housing? Some communities have outlawed it, like Milton has, and they're going to be punished, I guess, by the government because of that. But what is your position on the MBTA communities bylaw?
Let's start with Jesse.
I'm completely against it because it's a mandated aspect that the state is requiring the town to do it. There's not a one-size-fits-all mentality here. Every town has their own aspect of how they want to run their own town. So all the power should be brought back to local, the local zoning. You take care of your own environmental aspects. But to be pushed by the town, and it goes deeper than that, too, with the MBTA. If you're not, they're taking away funding also. They're taking away that cherry sheet that you want, certain things. They're going to take that away from you if you don't abide by that rule right there. And so to answer your question, I'm against it, completely oppose that MBTA Communities Act.
Same question, Dee.
So the MBTA Communities Act actually does nothing to promote affordable housing. It is a zoning requirement, and you're required to do 15 units per acre. And Plymouth, based on the amount of housing that we have, was required to do 2,800 units because we are a community that's next door to an MBTA community. We don't have a running rail system right now. We were able to come up with 4 overlay zones, so we took credit for the multifamily housing that we have in place, and that was a great thing that we were able to do. The problem is, if we want to have the train be active again, that will increase the number of houses that we need to build, and they have to be within a half a mile of the train station. That would put an incredible burden on North Plymouth, an incredible burden on our infrastructure. Mm. I'm getting the signal that I have to stop talking, but it's not a good law.
Okay. Let's go to Tom Gorman. Questions for the candidates.
I just jump off of that a little bit. There was a housing crisis here in the state. How would you address that? How do you think that should be taken care of?
And let's begin with Dee.
So in terms of affordable housing, I would like to see the state get more involved in a program similar to what Plymouth has just done. So there's a project in Redbrook being done by Grantham. Plymouth uses CPC funds, and one of the things they can do with the CPC funds is put it towards affordable housing. We have just approved 62 units in Redbrook. The CPC is contributing, I believe, 3.5 or 4.5 million in total for a $20+ million project, and we're going to get 62 units of affordable housing. I would like to see the state step up and take care of communities by offering incentives to developers and tax breaks to developers, rather than forcing things like 40B developments down our throats when the community loses control over its local zoning and planning.
Same question, Jesse.
I think we agree a little bit. Is the repealing the 40B aspect, it's a horrible bill that you have passed right there. 40B, it really doesn't work at all. Again, it's forcing something on a town to bypass zoning laws for them to build whatever they want. Also, I do agree with Dee on this, is that you should incentivize the developers to do this and not mandate them to do anything. The one thing she was actually speaking about was what Plymouth does do with the funds from the preservation, with the CPC. I don't agree with that because they're already going into debt. So the money that they're already putting out there, there's already too much money going out there, and that's just going to affect the taxpayers, so it goes up a little bit more. So I do see where it's coming from. 10% of that fund is supposed to go to affordable housing minimum. They're allocated to put more, but at the end of the day, that's not going to happen.
I'd like to jump back to that question about the MBTA community zoning, and you touched a little bit on this, Dee, about the importance of housing near transit hubs. It, as many people know, they stopped the train service into Cordage Park. I'm sure a lot of people that wanted to have a business there or a home there probably weren't too happy about that. How does that make sense, and what would you do? Now, Dee, you had said earlier that if they did bring that train line back in, that it would increase even more. I mean, it seems like it's a no-win game with the state telling you what to do. How do you think that situation could be handled? I have more people that ask us about what happened to that train line. It just seems so strange. It's such a convenient spot, and yet there's no train there. What would you do? What would be your answer?
So at this point, with the MBTA Communities Law, I would not encourage the train to come to Plymouth, because I think it would put an extraordinary strain on North Plymouth and an extraordinary strain on our municipal services, our infrastructure, our school system, to force another literally 1,400 units in that one area within a half a mile of Cordage Park would be incredibly stressful for our community. I know that when the train was operational, there were problems with scheduling, and it wasn't running consistently, and it wasn't being utilized to the best of its ability.
Okay. Same question, Jesse. How would you handle that?
The train, so what they're talking about right now, the train probably more than likely will not come back to there. But what they want to do is they want to have shuttles going from that area over to Kingston. Mm. So that's what they want right now. And so it's going to be the same exact thing. That's going to be the workaround that they're going to see to push this, to push that. Okay. That's the workaround.
It just seems, not that I'm making a comment, it just seems so, you've got all those businesses there and people that want to live near there, and then the train's with no train. Right. It seems like, couldn't they just put the train in there and think, okay, don't pay attention to this. We can grandfather this in. So many people were disappointed by that, and I knew specifically moved to that area to actually have that convenience.
That's actually one of the things that the planning board would like to do. Mm-hmm. If they do revitalize the train, mm-hmm. they would like to have the MBTA communities, the fact that they've complied, have it be grandfathered.
You agree with that? Yeah.
Yeah, if it's grandfathered in.
Definitely. What time is it here? Okay, just checking. All right. I'm going to go back now to our own Bobby Clark for questions.
Yes. Continuing on this area of affordable housing, do you think that the accessory dwelling units or ADUs will really aid affordable housing, as the town seems to think it will?
Jesse?
Well, as of today, the governor actually just signed that bill today. So she, do I think it will? It should. What they're talking about should add 8 to 10,000 throughout the state. Now in Massachusetts and Plymouth, do I think it's going to help? I think every option should be on the table, but at the end of the day, it costs about $250,000. It's going to take about 8 to 14 months through permitting. That's if it goes quick enough, never mind the environmental aspect, the septic, the environmental impacts on everything. So there's a lot that goes into it, construction costs. And if you're not affording, and who benefits? The person that's living in the house, there's already a workaround. So I'm going to give you what the workaround is. You can't rent them. So they're going to build them. They're going to live in them, and they're going to rent out their main house. That's what's going to happen.
Same question, Dee.
So Plymouth actually passed an ADU bylaw before the state did, and it is one approach to the housing problem that we have, but it's just that. It's one approach. It is an expensive approach. It's not inexpensive. Ideally, it's going to take care of families where they have multiple generations in the household. I have lots and lots of friends in Plymouth who have children and parents living in their household with them.
They're brave people. You're listening to a political forum here on WATD. It is the primary, the Republican primary for the 1st Plymouth District. Both candidates are here, Dee Wallace Spencer and Jesse Brown. Let's go now to Tom Gorman. Questions for the candidates.
In recent years, there have been a lot of businesses and residents leaving Massachusetts. What do you think is causing that, and what can be done to reverse that trend?
And let's start with Dee.
A number of reasons. Number one, Massachusetts is becoming increasingly unaffordable. We have a millionaire's tax, which is driving away our highest earning residents. We have an out-migration of students with college degrees that are leaving because it's too expensive to live in Massachusetts. They can find work outside of Boston, outside of Massachusetts, and they can live there less expensively, and they can work via Zoom. It's amazing. Everybody can work remote now. It's a problem. We are now spending over $1 billion a year, and we're losing revenue to pay for the services that we need to take care of.
Okay, same question, Jesse.
Dee hit on the millionaire's tax, which is the 4%. So right now, you know, as a business or as a person, the reason we have the out-migration is that you're paying almost 9%. So all our high earners are leaving right now. So there's a revenue drop, and we're spending more money. Does not make sense, number one. The other poll that I just read were 20% of people within the next 5 years will leave Massachusetts, with another 19% moving out of their towns because it's too expensive to find a less affordable aspect to live, even if they don't move out. So if we don't do something right now, it's not going to stop. And Massachusetts is ranked on many polls and that they're the most expensive or the second most expensive state to live in the nation right now. And that's, I mean, that goes from every tax, regulations, it just adds to it. We have an infrastructure that we have our roads where we cost $700,000 to build 1 mile of road with a third highest in the nation. Where does that go when New Hampshire spends almost $250,000?
Okay, we're going to take a break here and listen to a few commercials, maybe public service announcements, and be back. You're listening to a WATD Political Forum.
I'm Tyson Sennerberg, co-founder of Type 1. Join us at 1 o'clock on Saturday, August 17th at Type 1 Fitness in Norwell for the 80s Fitness Flashback, backyard barbecue, and after party, supporting the Type 1 Cares campaign. Lace up those neon sneakers and pump up that hair for the gnarliest event of the year. All ages and skill levels welcome. Support those living with Type 1 diabetes and help fund research for a cure. Visit type1fitness.org. That's T-Y-P-E-O-N-E fitness.org.
If you're looking for something different to do, the South Shore Radio Control Club in Bridgewater is having an RC airplane fly-in on Saturday, August 10th. You'll see large World War I biplanes, World War II fighters, aerobatics, stunt planes, and more.
The flying site is located on the grounds of the Bridgewater Correctional Facility. See the SSRCC website, ssrcc.org. Stop by and have fun and see what RC model aviation is all about.
The 2024 Friends of Bridgewater Music Alley Free Summer Concert Series continues this Thursday evening at Black Cat Brew Works in Bridgewater with singer-songwriter Jake Manzi and opening act King Manzi. Shows are family-friendly, food trucks available on-site as well. Head over to bridgewatermusicalley.com for details. That's bridgewatermusicalley.com for the 2024 Friends of Bridgewater Music Alley Free Summer Concert Series.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
That's right. We are back here in Studio B. Just took a quick break, getting some of this delicious Marshfield tap water. Always good. Getting him a thumbs up for that. We're listening to a political forum here tonight. It is for the 1st Plymouth District. We've got the Republican primary. Two candidates here in studio, Jesse Brown and Dee Wallace Spencer. Now, we a lot of times people think, well, yeah, I know what my district is, but just to reinforce that, because I know after redistricting, we've gotten calls from a lot of people who are not really sure exactly. Well, thank you. I love this. Exactly what their district is. And it in Plymouth, it is precincts 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. I always forget how big Plymouth is. I think we left off with you, Tom Gorman. You did the last question. Any follow-up to that? All right, then I'm going to ask a question. You both speak of your support for first responders. What do you think they're not getting enough of right now? That's part one. And what would you do to advocate for them to receive? Let's start with you, Jesse.
Just to mention, I was just endorsed by the Massachusetts Fraternal Order of Police, so I've always been a big supporter of the police, firefighters, and our first responders from day one. Being a veteran in the Marine Corps, it's a very personal thing for me that we have to defend and advocate for the people that put their lives on the line every day for us. One of the biggest things that we see right now and that I hear from the agencies is that it's the retention and the recruitment aspects. That's number one. And it's down. The funding is not proper right now also. We can get into that but it's the recruitment and retention aspect of it. People are leaving. We're not getting new people in. And it was because it could be from the media. We're villainizing our officers, and we can't be doing that. That's our biggest thing right now, is the advocacy, not to villainize our officers.
Okay. Same question to you, Dee. I know you're a big supporter of first responders. What do you think they're not getting right now?
So, for starters, Jesse, thank you for your service. I don't think they're being prioritized. I don't think they're getting the respect that they deserve. I'm going to give you an example from corrections. So our corrections officers put their lives on the line every day, and the legislature chose to fund phone calls for prisoners, and that is coming out of our corrections budget. They did not cover it, so this is another unfunded mandate. It says to our corrections officers, you are less important. We are going to prioritize phone calls for prisoners. And they're looking at a cost of $20 million a year across the state. I know in Plymouth they're looking at a cost of over $1 million a year. That comes directly out of their budget. It does not enable them to focus on doing their jobs. It takes resources away from them to do their jobs.
Let me ask you both follow-up then. You talked about the things that they don't have. What would you advocate for first responders? Dee?
I would advocate for pay. I would advocate for benefits. I would advocate for educational support. I would advocate for advanced training. And I would advocate for the most advanced technology that we can give them.
Okay. Same question. What would you advocate for them?
Just to add on to that, I agree with everything that she said right there.
Okay.
She hit it right on the spot. I will say that we can't take away funding. And the last budget that we had, Taunton, for example, was supposed to get $500,000. They ended up getting their budget cut in half to $250,000. There was multiple towns and cities that got their budgets cut. So just what Dee was talking about, you can't do any of that without the money. So you have to advocate for the money first. That's the job of the legislature. That's the job of the state rep that's going to be up there. They have to advocate to get you the money and the proper funding. You can advocate for everything else, but if you don't have the money, it's not going to happen.
Okay. Questions for the candidates? Bobby Clark?
Yeah. The State Department of Environmental Protection just denied Holtec's request to dump 1.1 million gallons of radioactive waste into Cape Cod Bay. What would you do if you were to represent us at the state level to ensure that that ruling sticks?
Jesse?
I think one thing we have to realize, too, is that we've already had 1 million gallons of this dumped in over the last 10 years. So this isn't something new that hasn't happened. And I don't think many people know that. And it's been, I mean, you can go on Holtec's website. It says it right on there that they are allowed to dump it. The NRC allows them to dump this right now. I don't agree with the dumping. I'm a huge supporter of our fishermen and our bay, our coastal. You can't dump it in there because there are alternatives to doing this. We talk about evaporation, getting it shipped off site. I think shipping it off site is probably our best option because it takes it out of Plymouth. Where it goes, what they do with it, that's the next discussion. But I think that's the first discussion that should be on the table, that it gets shipped off-site.
Dee,
we're in complete agreement here. It should be shipped off-site. It's the safest method. I know that there's a great deal of scientific discussion, and there's back and forth about what is safe and what is not safe. But in my opinion, it's not prudent to take risks if there's a possibility that it won't be safe. And I do believe there was a Holtec representative who said that evaporation is actually not as good an idea because it's more concentrated. So, but we are in
it
agreement.
Is evaporating right now, too.
Yes, yes.
As we speak.
Yes.
Okay. Can I just follow up
you
a little bit on that?
Okay.
But we also got the rods there. So it's not just the water. So we're talking about radioactive waste. We have a plethora of dry cast storage sitting up there that I drive by every single day. And these rods are just sitting there evaporating, the heat coming off of them. You can see it actually coming out of the vents out of the top of the dry cast storage. So we should be shipping those off site also. And the water is obviously number one because that's the next thing for the decommissioning. But the rods are the next issue.
Okay. Did you want to do a follow-up with that same issue?
We're in complete agreement.
Okay. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates?
Do you believe that there is global warming that is causing rising sea levels that is affecting coastal communities? There's concern about that of late.
Okay.
And if you do, what are your thoughts about that? How to address it?
Let's start with Dee.
Yes, and I do believe that Plymouth is definitely impacted by it. We have miles and miles of coastline. And our priority should be climate resiliency. We need to make sure that our walls are strong and that we can battle it and we can take care of our communities. We're also protecting inland communities. So we want to make sure that we have properties that are at risk of going off a cliff, right, down in South Plymouth. But yeah, it is a priority, and coastal resiliency is a priority.
Same question, Jesse.
Yeah, so coastal resiliency is a complete issue that's close to me also. I mean, Plymouth is a huge town, has a long coastline. Beach nourishment is something that's really big. We have Long Beach that protects the harbor. As Dee was saying also, we have cliffs that are falling into the water. We do need We need funding again. We need to be able to streamline the regulations to build the seawalls. The conservation committees have to be able to push these and not wait years and years so there's more damage that's being done to our coastlines. That's the biggest aspect that we have that's there. I'm also a big proponent for the blue economy, where you're bringing in a kind of a balance of nature and business into the same thing. So just to give one example, I know my time's running out, but aquaculture, that's another aspect to bring in. You're creating business, but also at the same time, you're cleaning the water. So we should be promoting these industries at the same time.
Okay. Any follow-up with that? Okay. Making Plymouth more affordable for seniors is a noble cause. How realistic is it? Jesse Brown.
As what's going on right now, it's not realistic. As we just said, we have a migration going out. Seniors can't afford it. We have the ADUs that we have to do just to have families stay in place right now. So to your question, is it attainable? You're trying to do it, but they're not going to stay in their house by themselves. It's just not going to happen.
Okay, so a follow-up question. What do you think could be done in the next legislative session?
So one thing I would propose, I'm a huge supporter of veterans also. So this is just one thing. There's a lot of senior veterans that are out there. Mm-hmm. We just passed the HEROES Act, which put in place a property exemption tax that doubled it. So right now, Plymouth has a $400 exemption tax that go up to $800. Taxes have skyrocketed up. I would propose, if I was there, minimum, if you're retired, 75% of any veteran that's there that's retired, 75% property exemption tax.
Okay. Same question, Dee. It's a Plymouth, making Plymouth more affordable for seniors. It's a noble cause. How realistic is it?
It's not impossible. It is possible. And I will say, I agree with Jesse on the HEROES Act, and it's actually going to be signed into law tomorrow. The governor is going to be signing tomorrow. It's not impossible. We have an incredibly creative leadership team in Plymouth. We have really creative members of the planning board and the select board and the ZBA. And there have been development proposals that have been offered for over 55 housing. There was a proposal made in the Cordage, not the Cordage, the line of Kingston. And it would have been a 55 and over community. And I think that Plymouth as a community needs to be more receptive. Sometimes you have people that come out and they fight. Some people don't want any kind of development. But as a community, we need to embrace alternative options. And that's one alternative option that would be very helpful.
I just want to ask you both a quick follow-up question. And we've asked this with other candidates. You know, I'm always into show me the data, show me the numbers. So people talk about affordable housing, sensible housing, realistic. What do you think is affordable, a number, for a house or a condo in Plymouth? What's affordable?
So that's an excellent question. And one of the problems that we're confronted with is that we are designated as our area median income is designated with Boston. So when HUD does its evaluation for what our area median income mm-hmm. should be, they base 80% affordable on what Boston is, not on what Plymouth is. And that's created real problems, because when we create affordable housing, 40Bs are at 80%. And none of our residents can afford what's designated affordable housing.
But if you had to choose a number, like an affordable house is $500,000, a rental property is $2,000. What do you think is affordable?
That's a great question. I don't think you could find a house in Plymouth for $500,000 right now. It's skyrocketing. $500,000 would be a victory if you could get a $500,000 house right now.
What do you think is affordable for a rental?
$2,000 for a family.
Okay. Same question, Joe. What's affordable?
And I think it's an open-ended question there, because if you have the young people right now will not be able to afford a house. It's just it will not happen. Seniors, the same thing. They're just staying in their houses, but the taxes are skyrocketing. Their taxes are almost becoming a mortgage right now. So to answer your question, what do I think is affordable for somebody to get in? I bought my first house when I was 24, and it was $240,000, and that was expensive at that time. Mm-hmm. I had four. It was about a 5% interest rate at that time when I bought that house. And I was working 60 hours a week just to pay that. And that was about $2,000 at the end of the day. So for a rental, I think rental should be anywhere from $1,000 to $1,400 to be acceptable with today's rates. I mean, that's just to be affordable. Mm-hmm. Is it right for the landlords with all the costs? But the way to make that work is you have to bring the cost down in other aspects. So, you know, you have to repeal, you have to take back taxes so the landlords aren't getting messed up all the time. I wanted to use a different word, but the landlords aren't getting, sorry, I love this subject, so I can keep going on it.
I know, and parents, they want their kids out of the basements.
Well, and that's where we get to the ADUs. Like you want to give kids opportunities to
to the attic,
to move on, not keep them there.
There's other kids in the attic, attics, basements, whatever.
Right?
It's like, we love you, but get out of the house. Questions for the candidates. Bobby Clark.
Well, I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that when you're elected, you can choose to serve on different committees. And so if you were elected, what committee would you choose, committee or committees would you choose to serve on?
Jesse?
So I would love to serve on the Veterans and Federal Affairs Committee. The Transportation Committee is another one, if there's three of them. And then I would like to do the Telecommunications, Energy, and Utilities Committee.
I would love to serve on Ways and Means. I would also love to serve on transportation because I have a strong background in transportation and public safety as well.
Okay. Tom Gorman, questions to candidates?
In recent years, a lot of communities have been complaining about this state aid formula, that it's unfair. What is your thoughts about that?
If it's unfair,
how should it be fixed?
It's unfair. I think that it's a redistribution of wealth, I don't think it's fair. I think that communities should be more fairly apportioned funds. Plymouth is one of the largest towns, maybe the largest town in the state, and I think it gets less funds because it plans on, it looks at Plymouth as able to raise more money in taxes and have less things to take care of, less needs. So if it designates you as having more access to taxes and less needs, you end up with less money.
Same question.
She hit it right on the spot. It's just unfair, completely.
Okay. Let's talk about the ballot questions. These are pretty interesting. Question number one, the state auditor's authority to audit the legislature. Jesse Brown, what do you think? Yes or
yes.
No?
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
That's common sense. That should already be happening. And why isn't it? That's the question we should ask. Why isn't it happening already?
I'll ask you, even though I just heard the burst of song that came from you. I think that's a yes.
Bring it on. Absolutely. She tried to have them do it voluntarily. They said no. She tried to sue them. She didn't win. It's now going to be on the ballot. I hope it passes overwhelmingly. I hope everybody votes for it. It absolutely needs to be done. We have one of the most least transparent systems in the country. Please vote for this.
80-20 it's going to be. Yes.
Yeah. Roberta? Ms. Clark?
Well, I wanted to just raise quickly the issue of county government. Do you think county government is needed? And if so, why?
Me first?
Yes, please.
Yes, I do think so. And I think that they advocate for resources that we would not otherwise get. They take care of larger regional issues that would not be addressed properly, and I think we need to keep county government.
Jesse? I do. If this was asked before COVID, I probably would have answered no, but after COVID, you answered yes, because they were able to get a lot more funds and allocate them properly out there. So yes, we would keep it.
I still am going to ask that during the lightning round, though. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates.
What is your approach on balancing historical preservation within the critical needs of local communities?
Jesse?
Again, that's very important. We go back to where the character of the town, every town is different. So Plymouth has a tremendous character down there. You have to be able to keep it, and that goes back to local zoning, to keep the historical commission being able to do what they want, not being mandated to do something the state requires anywhere down there. So the historical districts that we have right now, I mean, there've been some bad decisions, especially in Plymouth, right on Water Street. How that some of those buildings got approved down there in the historical district is mind-boggling to me, but it happened. So to preserve that is the utmost importance.
So I do serve on the Economic Development Foundation in Plymouth, and that's one of the things that, we're looking at right now. We're looking at trying to, for instance, improve some of the downtown areas, and we want to make sure that it's done in concert with the historical preservation, things that are important to the community, things that are important for the Historical Commission. I agree with Jesse. Are we going to disagree on anything?
And I think that one of the bigger things, though, too, majority of our district is not the historical district. Because downtown and north, that area, that's a historical district in Plymouth. As Christine read earlier, the districts that we're taking out of Plymouth, we're not really part of that. Doesn't mean that we don't agree with it, but we still have to represent all of Plymouth. At the end of the day, the business is down there, because a lot of the business owners live in our district, even though their business is down there.
Let me ask you a question. What kind of Republican are you? How would you describe yourself? Are you conservative, moderate, or rhino? How do you do it, Dee?
If I had to define myself, I would say that I wouldn't use any label. I would talk about my approach. My approach would be to do a lot of research on all of the issues, to review both sides of an issue, to come up with as many details as possible, and to think clearly and sensibly about what is best for my community. I wouldn't call myself an extremist. I wouldn't call myself a moderate. I would call myself someone who is going to think about the impacts of my decision on my community. That's what kind of legislator I will be.
Okay. What about you, Jesse?
I would say I'm a conservative Republican, but as a Republican for all. I mean, you have to be, if you're representing, you're representing everybody, what your beliefs are, what you bring up to the state house. You have to be principled in what you believe in, but at the same time, you are representing every single person in your district.
Okay.
There's a lot to be said for common sense.
Okay. Bobby Clark?
What do you think, if you get to represent our district, what do you think best prepared you to represent our district in your life experiences?
Do you want me or Jesse?
Jesse.
That can be a long question. I mean, I think I relate the most to the people of this district. I mean, I've struggled. I grew up poor. I lived in the projects. I lived in multifamily homes. Joined the Marine Corps. I worked blue collar. I wore a hard hat for 10 years, work boots, ate my lunch off the back of a tailgate, but then started my business working 18 hours a day for years. So that struggle from the, you want to say it's a rags to riches, it's not rich, but it's a rags to the American dream that you have there. And I think that that's best relates me to represent the people, because you have such a life experience of every angle where you know it firsthand. You have that firsthand experience in being multifaceted. I think if I was to describe myself, it's being multifaceted in many different arenas.
Thanks. Same question, Dee.
Probably the best experience that I have for the legislature is my service on the Faculty Senate. So I have the same experience. I have built my own businesses. I have worked getting dirty. I have very, very deep community roots, but I've also represented people already. I know what goes into creating bills. I know what goes into working with constituents. I understand what needs to be done to come to consensus. I think that respectful debate and understanding of different issues and coming up with something that works for everybody is going to be really important moving forward. And I do believe that I have a very strong ability to work with people to get things done.
Okay. What makes you the better candidate against your Democratic opponents?
Dee?
Against my Democratic opponent?
Mm-hmm.
Not against Jesse?
We're thinking in the future here.
Well, I don't know who my Democratic opponent is going to be yet. There are four on the Democratic side. But I will tell you, if we're talking about what I think makes me the stronger candidate overall, I'm a workhorse. I have spent the last 8 months working my backside off, and I intend to do that moving forward. I am going to take care of my community. I am going to be a fierce advocate for my community. I have decades of advocating that I will use once I get to Beacon Hill. And I have experience in multiple different fields that are going to inform my presentations.
Okay. Same question, Jesse.
Who do you think is going to win the Democratic primary?
Then I can answer a little bit.
Let's just say what makes you the best.
No, I know. I'm just joking. because I'm a proven leader throughout my life, from being in the Marine Corps to starting businesses. I've always been in leadership positions and working with people to become successful. So that just leads that whoever is the Democrat candidate out there, who knows? It really doesn't matter, because it's about the person that's running at the end of the day. You want the best person to be in that position. And we could sit here and advocate why I'm the best person, but you need leadership up at Beacon Hill, and I'm a proven leader in multiple ways.
Okay. Let's go to the lightning round questions now, and these are the questions that are either yes or no answers, or one... Look at the big smiles here, or one or two sentences tops. And I know you kind of asked this question earlier, but it's gotten to be a tradition, because I know a former politician still listens in and gets angry every time I say it. So Plymouth County government, stay or go? That's a yes or no question. D.
Yes, stay.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, stay. All right. Bobby Clark.
Would you favor a ban, statewide ban, on the sale of NIPS?
Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
No.
Tom?
Should there be term limits at the state and national level?
Jesse?
100% yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Who is your favorite Olympian? Jesse?
Simon Biles.
Okay.
I haven't watched this
okay.
this whole period. I'm at a complete loss.
Okay. Let's go. Bobby?
Do you think Plymouth is overdeveloped?
D. Two sentences.
Yes.
Okay, Jesse.
Yes.
Okay, Tom. All right. Two sentences. Are you worried about the future of water in Plymouth, Jesse?
Yes.
You can have up to two.
Yes, because if we with the overdevelopment, it's just going to extract it. So 100%. Yes.
Okay. What about you, D?
In two sentences. I'm not worried about the future of water in Plymouth. I'm worried about access and transportation of water. We sit on a sole source aquifer.
There's two sentences.
Which we need to protect. But right now we have difficulty transporting
Lightning. Okay. And this is, did you have another one? Lightning round question.
Do you have a preference or an idea of how best the county woodlot would be used?
Two sentences. Jesse.
We can talk about that after.
D?
I would not like to see massive housing development put there.
Okay. And one more, because I had so much fun asking this last time. Would you say or admit to watching less than 5 minutes of or more than 5 minutes of the Karen Reed trial? Jesse?
It was
less than
less.
Or more than?
It was
okay.
less.
Less than or more than?
A little bit more.
Okay. There we go. All right, let's go to closing statements now. We're going to reverse the order that we started in. And when we started with these, if I can find my original page of notes, I think we started with you, Dee.
Yeah.
We started. So let's switch, and we'll begin with Jesse, and then we'll go Jesse Brown, then we'll go to Dee Wallace Spencer. 1 minute, please. Jesse.
Well, thank you again to all of our listeners, to WATD and our moderators for hosting this Republican primary forum. If you answered yes to any of the questions earlier, are you struggling, keeping more of your hard-earned money, safety being a priority, then your vote should be for a leader that understands your struggles firsthand and will put your best interests first. Growing up poor with a single mother, enlisting in the Marines at 17, working endless hours in the construction industry, being a dedicated father, creating and maintaining a successful business, consistently giving back to the community, you need a person that will represent you and not their personal interests. I'm a hardworking, resilient, conservative, common sense, salt of the earth person, a proven leader who will get things done and make Massachusetts residents first. Thank you for listening. I'm Jesse Brown, Republican for State Representative in the 1st Plymouth. I respectfully ask for your vote on or before September 3rd. It will be an honor to serve the people of Plymouth. Thank you to all listeners out there.
Thank you. That was Jesse Brown. Closing statement, D. Wallace Spencer.
Thank you, WATD and Local Scene, for hosting this forum. And thank you to everyone listening. For the past 8 months, I've spoken with people from Cedarville to Cordage, and they all say the same thing. Plymouth is facing big challenges, and state government is not helping. Instead, it's barraging us with unfunded mandates, 40B developments, and increased taxes. It's spending billions of dollars on the migrant crisis while simultaneously cutting essential services to residents. These policy decisions have made Massachusetts increasingly unaffordable. This needs to change. Plymouth needs serious, smart, determined leadership that is not afraid to challenge the status quo. My educational and professional experiences have prepared me well to advocate for my community. I will work hard to address the issues that are vital to the residents of Plymouth. My priority is Plymouth. We have to do better, and I know that we can.
Thank you. That was the final statement for D. Wallace Spencer. You've been listening to a WATD political forum here. The Republicans running in the first district of Plymouth, D. Wallace Spencer, Jesse Brown, and here our media partner tonight, the local scene, PAC TV. I want to thank Bobby Clark and Tom Gorman from WATD, also Charlie Fulmer. This is going to be up on our website tomorrow so people can listen over and over again and enjoy this. And we always like to tell people, tune in to WATD on primary night. We'll be bringing you all the results. Get out there and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD. Thanks for listening.